Morning. Today's Daf and Sanhedrin is Yud Aleph. We have our work cut out for ourselves today. We are on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. We are towards the top of the Amud on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara is now discussing the consideration of Tkufa. In the event that the year is cut short, which in every lunar year the year is cut short, as we've been discussing now for the last couple of days, every year the lunar year is cut short. When I say cut short, I just simply mean short of a solar year. A solar year is 365 days. A lunar year is 354 days. All these numbers I'm giving are approximations. So that means that a lunar year in approximation is going to be 11 days shorter than that of a solar year. So that means, of course, that every year that you just simply follow a standard lunar calendar of 12 months, so you're going to be falling 11 days behind. After three short years, you're falling a month behind that of the solar year. So that means that if this year, let's say for example, Pesach is in April, 3 years from now, Pesach is going to be in March. 3 years from now, Pesach is going to be in February. And Pesach will just keep creeping up into the winter months. The Torah tells us that Pesach has to be Chag Haviv. It has to be during the ripening. And it also says that Sukkot has to be B'tkufas. Regarding Sukkot, it says Chag Ha'asif Tkufas Hashana, that the Yontif of gathering, meaning Sukkot, has to be Tkufas Hashana in the beginning of the Tkufa. So what we saw yesterday was the Gemara being a little bit more specific in terms of when exactly we need the Yomim Tovim to fall relative to the Tkufas. And as we explained yesterday, and I'm just going to quickly introduce again today, the idea of Tkufas is that in the solar year you have basically 4 points in the solar year, which are, if you will, like markers of the solar year. You have the two equinoxes and you have the two solstices. Sorry. It's easier to say one. Solstice. But solstices. Okay, anyway. So you have two equinoxes and you have two solstices. And the equinoxes are basically when the equator is closest to the sun, and that's going to be occurring twice during the year. And then you have the vernal equinox and the autumnal equinox. And the solstices are when, you can look at it in one of two ways, but it's the same basic point, when the equator is the furthest away from the sun or when the poles are the closest to the sun. So so these are the four markers of the year. As I mentioned yesterday, I'll just simply repeat again today. These are not days of the year. These are points of the year. And they occur during a day. And as we will be seeing over the course of today's daf, which is really yesterday's daf, basically the Gemara is going to have a machlokus whether or not when the tkufa occurs during the day is at the end of a season or is at the beginning of the next season. Because again, the actual point itself is not the day. It's just simply a point within the day. And what we discussed yesterday, we just went through the first brisa yesterday. I'm just going to quickly review today. I'm not going to do it inside, just do it outside. We have two opinions amongst the Tanaim in terms of how much of Sukkot has to be during the new season. Meaning, Sukkot has to be during the autumnal equinox. The Torah says it. Torah says it actually pretty clearly. It says, Chag Hasif Tkufas Hashana. It says that the Yontif of Sukkot has to be during the Tkufa. So as we saw Rashi yesterday, it means that a time when you gather. We're not going to include Yontif in this because you can't gather on Yontif. We are going to include Chol HaMoed. You are allowed to gather on Chol HaMoed. Now again, Chol HaMoed Melacha is Asur, but as Rashi points out in yesterday's Daf, for a Davar HaAved, Melacha would be Mutter. Okay. It's possible to do malacha on Chol HaMoed, and so therefore we're talking about doing the asifa during Chol HaMoed. How much of Chol HaMoed has to be during this autumnal equinox? So we saw yesterday, Machlokus HaTanayim on this matter, Machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. At least this is Rabbi Yehuda Mashmul's version of the Machlokus. Whereas, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we saw yesterday, you need all of Chol HaMoed to be during the autumnal equinox, which means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to have the equinox coming out on the 16th day of Tishrei. 15th day of Tishrei is obviously Yantiv. 16th day is the first day of Chol HaMoed. So, in order for you to have a successful Yantiv, meaning right, successful, meaning in the right kufa, so you need Chol HaMoed to be on the 16th. If Chol HaMoed occurs after the 16th, meaning from 17th and onward, so that is now too late, and we need to push the Yomim Tovim forward. The way we're going to push them forward is by adding an Adar 5 months earlier. 7 months earlier.
I'm sorry, you said Chol HaMoed coming out on the 17th.
Huh? The equinox. If the equinox were to occur on the 17th, 18th, thank you, that's right. If this equinox comes out on the 17th and 18th, or any time after the 17th, so you push it forward by introducing an entire additional month, 7 months earlier in Adar. Ben pointed out yesterday, Rashi also made this point yesterday, Rashi made it before Ben, but it's still good. It's you can tweak it a little bit with just the Chadasha, meaning you could just add a couple of extra Iber months, and you don't have to go forward, you don't have to go to the extent of adding a full month in order to push it a little bit forward, push the Yom Tov a little bit forward. That's true, but as we pointed out yesterday, and Rashi points out, you're capped in terms of how many months you can make. You can make an extended month. You can only do 8 months a year. And on top of that, also remember, we also pointed out yesterday, the idea of Tkufa is one of the considerations, as we pointed out already a couple days ago. There are multiple considerations that have to be taken into account in terms of adding an Iber Yor. So this is not the only consideration. Okay, and according to Rabbi Yossi, just finishing up a review from yesterday, and according to Rabbi Yossi, you only need one day of Chol HaMoed to be during the new Tkufa, during the new fall season. And so that means that according to Rabbi Yossi, as long as you have the autumnal equinox coming out on the 21st day, you are good. You will be fine. You will be having one day of Sukkot during the Tkufa, and that would be sufficient, and you don't need more than that. So that means that according to Rav Yossi, if the autumnal equinox were to occur on the 22nd or onward, so then that's too late, and then and only then are we going to have to push the Yom Tov forward by adding another Adar 7 months prior. I said all that by way of quick review of the Gemara that we did yesterday. We are continuing in the Gemara. We are on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, and we are now starting with the words. Va'od Tanya. No. Back up. Meisvei. Okay. Meisvei on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. It's about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. First word in the line is Kesavri. The Gemara is going to challenge what we just learned together. Yom Tkufa Gomer Div Rav Yehuda Rav Yossi Amar Yom Tkufa Mascha. First, we are exposing ourselves to a machlokis between Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi, whether the Yom Tkufa is the end of a season or the beginning of a season. As I mentioned in the introduction, the Tkufa itself is a point in the day. The day that it comes down in, is at the end of the season or the beginning of the season? Here, the Braisa tells us very clearly, it's a machlokis ha-time. The problem, of course, is that according to Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, he understands that both Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi view the Yom HaTkufa as the beginning of the new season. And so this braisa contradicts what Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel taught us. That's point number one. Va'od. And the Gemara says, I'll give you another thing to consider as well. Tanya. The Gemara quotes another braisa. Ein ma'abram z'ashala eshana ela imken aysa tkufa chaser rubo shel chodesh. V'kama rubo shel chodesh shisha asar yom. So the Gemara quotes the opinion of the Tanakama. And the Tanakama says that in order to push, in order to trigger Iber Hashana, so the Tkufa has to come out later than the 16th. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shteyadus Bechodesh. And in this Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda says, no. In order to trigger Iber HaChodesh, the Tkufa has to come out two-thirds of the month through. Now, two-thirds of a month. So assuming a month is 30 days, I know that is not a constant, but assuming a month is 30 days, so two-thirds obviously would be 20. V'kamash teyadus b'chodesh chaf yom. That's exactly what the Braisa says, that two-thirds of a month will be 20 days. And Rav Yossi Omer, now Rav Yossi gives us a third opinion in this Braisa. And he says, mechashon shisha asar lifnei ha-Pesach, ma'abrin shisha asar lifnei ha-Chag. I'm sorry, Mechashvin. Shisha asar lifnei ha-Pesach, ma'abrim, shisha asar lifnei ha-Chag, ein ma'abrim. Rabbi Yossi tells us that, basically, see what happens in terms of the vernal equinox, and that will relate to what's happening in the autumnal equinox. Now, to say it succinctly, it basically works like this. We know that each season is a quarter of the year, and a quarter of the solar year. Now, I don't want to get too specific, although to really understand that you really need to be more specific, I'm just going to do ballpark. In other words, if we're going to look at one season is 91 days. That's an approximation, that's not an exact number. Two seasons is going to be 182 days. Again, obviously these are approximations. And you know they're approximations, because if I take 182 and I multiply by 2, that's 364. That's short of the 365 days of a solar year. So what I'm giving is just simple approximations. But for our purposes right now, these numbers will help us understand. So if we are looking at the vernal equinox, and the vernal equinox is coming out on a given day, so that means that the autumnal equinox will come out 182 days later. Again, I'm saying all this in approximation, but it certainly helps us understand. So that means now that, according to Rav Yossi, look at the vernal equinox. If the vernal equinox were to be occurring on the 16th day of... If the vernal equinox were to be occurring on the 16th day of Nisan, so now, just move the calendar 182 days later... Assume, as part of this movement, assume that we're going to go on, off regarding the months between the 30 day and the 29, 30 day, 29, as is normally the case in a lunar calendar. And then what you're going to find is that if you go in this movement 182 days later, you're going to find that the autumnal equinox is going to start on the 22nd day of Tishrei. 22nd day of Tishrei, Sukkot is over. Sukkot has come to a conclusion on the 21st day of Tishrei. So basically, if the vernal equinox is on the 16th day of Nisan, the autumnal equinox is going to be occurring on the 26th and the 22nd day of Tishrei. So Rav Yossi says, if that's the case, you've missed it. So that is how Rav Yossi gauges whether or not we're going to need to add another Adar. Okay? And then that was the third opinion of the Braisa. And then... Rabbi Shimon Omer, okay, one more opinion to consider. Rabbi Shimon Omer... if it is 16 days before Sukkot, we're going to be ma'abir. We will explain Reb Shimon's opinion in just a minute. And Acherim Omrim Yuta v'kama Yuta Arbas Hayom. And Acherim say that it's the minimum of the month. A minimum of the month is 14 days. Okay, and that position is also going to be explained momentarily. What have we just seen in this Braisa that is puzzling? The first two opinions. Meaning, that in the first two opinions of the Braisa, we had recorded Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi Yehuda said that in order to be Ma'ab the Shana, it has to be on the... the equinox has to fall out after day 16. According to Rabbi Yossi, it has to fall out after day 20. That is not the same as is recorded in the Braisa version of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmol. And the Gemara just simply says Kasha. So the Gemara says, okay. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel's position and his understanding of Rabbi Yossi and of that of Rabbi Yehuda is not going to coordinate with that of the Braisa that we just quoted. And the Gemara just simply shrugs his shoulders and basically says, you're right. Point well taken. Okay. In the Braisa that we just quoted, we have just registered a number of opinions in terms of when are we too late? When is the autumnal equinox coming out too late? And it would trigger and it would demand the adding of an additional month. Amar. So the Gemara now is just going to go back, revisit some of these positions, try to understand these positions a little bit better. Rav Yehuda Amar Sheyados Bechorosh Esrim Yom. Rav Yossi Amar Mechashen Shisha Asayim Lufnei HaPesach Ma'abrim Hainu Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says now, Rav Yossi's position, although it's a little bit complicated, basically what he says is, look at the vernal equinox, count 182 days later, and you're going to come out now to the autumnal equinox. But the truth of the matter is that when all said and done, after all the calculations, do you know that effectively, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda are saying the exact same point? Which is basically that if Chol HaMoed Sukkot is missing the autumnal equinox, so then you have to be Ma'aber. But the truth, Rabbi Yehuda is just looking at it from the perspective of Tishrei. Rabbi Yossi is saying, well, you could figure it out going all the way back to Nisan. But when all said and done, they really are expressing the same basic idea. I need some of Sukkot to be in the autumnal equinox. Otherwise, and when I say some, I just simply mean one day, and that would be sufficient. So the Gemara says, so really they are saying the same thing. So why does it sound like there are two different opinions? Yom Tkufa Gomer v'Yom Tkufa Maschal Ika Beinayim. So the Gemara says no. There is one subtle difference between the two positions, and that's the following. That the day in which the autumnal equinox actually lands, so is that going to be the beginning of the new season or the end of the previous season? The Gemara says that's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the day that the equinox lands on, that will be the end of the previous season. Which means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, I therefore needed to come out on the 20th, because that's the end of the previous season. It's only the next day which is going to be the beginning of the new season. So that means that in order for Chol HaMoed Sukkos to be in the new season, I needed to fall out after day 21, after day 20, which means that the autumnal equinox falls on day 20. The next day now is the beginning of the new season, and as long as I have one day of Chol HaMoed during the beginning of the new season, that would be sufficient. Whereas according to Rav Yossi, no. Rav Yossi is of the opinion that as long as the actual day of the equinox falls on the last day of Chol HaMoed, you're good. Why? Because according to Rav Yossi, that is considered the day one of the next season. Okay, the Gemara says that is the subtle difference between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda. Amar, Shisha asar lifnei achag in ma'abrin, ela l'Rav Yossi, Shisha asar lifnei achag hudalo, hashiv sar v'tamnei sar ma'abrin, v'ha'amar Shisha asar lifnei pesach in, batzir lo. So the Gemara says now, the way that Rav Yossi seems to be formulating his position, it sounds like the 16th day is the only day to consider. The Gemara says, I don't understand. It'd be true if it were the 17th, it'd be true if the 18th. So the Gemara says, idi v'idi em abrin. So the Gemara says, v'aydi detan resha shisha asar lifnei pesach, tanei nami shisha asar lifnei achag. So the Gemara says, as far as him using the marker of the 16th day, the Gemara says that was just for symmetrical purposes. But the truth of the matter is that according to Rabbi Yossi, as if you have it, as long as you have one day Chol HaMoed Sukkos occurring during the new Tkufa, so that would be sufficient, that would be good. The way the Braisa said it was just for purposes of symmetry. And then Rabbi Shimon Omer Avshisha Asar Lifnei Achag Ma'abrin. Rabbi Shimon says that is the if it comes out on the 16th day of Tishrei, so you're ma'aber. Hainu Tanakama. Now that position seems to be echoing the sentiment of the Tanakama, meaning according to the Tanakama of the Braisa, I need every day of Sukkos to come out. Sorry, every day of Chol HaMoed Sukkos to come out during during the new Tkufa. And if I don't have that, so then I have to be ma'aber. According to Rabbi Yehuda Mar Shmuel's version. According to the Braisa's version, no. And the Gemara just simply, that's where the Gemara ended up by saying Kasha. The Gemara said that portion of the discussion is unresolvable. But the Gemara says, according now to Rabbi Shimon, you need every day of Chol HaMoed Sukkos to be during the new Tkufa. The Gemara says, but that's the Tanakhama's position. And again, there seems to be a retread of positions. So the Gemara says now, as we turn to the top of Yugim Amud Beis, the Ika Benayu, the Gemara says, no, there is going to be, once again, a distinction made between these two positions, and that is Yom Tkufa Maschal V'Yom Tkufa Gomer V'lo Mesayme. So the Gemara says, once again, we're going to say, like we said previously, that there is a subtle distinction between Rabbi Shimon and the Tanakhama, and that is the actual day of the equinox itself. Is that considered the end of the previous season, or is that considered the beginning of the new season? So the Gemara says, that's what Rabbi Shimon and the Tanakhama are arguing about, but the Gemara admits that if left to our own devices and trying to figure out who says which position, the Gemara says, I don't know. Meaning, we know what they're arguing about, we just happen not to know which position is taking which side, whether the equinox is considered the end of the previous season or the beginning of the new season. Okay. And now, Acherim Omrim, we're almost done with these Gemaras, but they're in the Braisa, we recorded a last opinion, that's the opinion of Acherim. And he said, Mi Uto. That if you have 14 days, well, that's not enough. Now, v'kama miyuto abrasar yom. My kasarvi. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. And the Gemara says, I'm confused. Ikasarvi yom tkufa gomer. So the Gemara says, well, if, let's say, the day of the equinox itself is the completion of the previous season, v'kulechag be'inan, and I need the entirety of Sukkos to fall in the new season, ha'ika. So the Gemara says, well, if day 14 is considered the end of the previous season, and I need the entire sukkah to fall out in the new season, so you're good, right? So Amar of Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Acherim b'tkufas Nisan Kaimeh. So the Gemara says, well, you misunderstood. Meaning you assumed, we all assumed, that the Acherim were of the were focusing on the month of Tishrei. Meaning the only one who was gauging back to Nisan was the opinion of Rav Yossi. But outside of Rav Yossi, the Tanakama, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, and presumably the Acherim were all looking at the month of Tishrei. So one explanation of Acherim is that, no, they were not looking at the month of Tishrei, but rather they were looking at the month of Nisan.
What difference does it make whether
they look at
Nisan or Tishrei?
Dichsiv, Shemor es Chodesh Aviv. And why would Nisan be different? Because when it comes to Nisan, the Torah was describing not the Yontif of Sukkot, but rather the Torah was describing the month of Nisan. The Torah says, Shemor es Chodesh Ha'aviv. I need the month to be a seasonally, I need the month to be a spring month. Now, Shmor Aviv Shel Tkufa Sheyeh B'Chodesh Nisan. Now, I need the month of Nisan to be a spring month. Now, in order for a month to be a spring month, you could look at it in a number of ways, admittedly, but but what the Gemara now is demanding is that in order for Nisan to be a spring month, I need the majority of Nisan to be a spring month, which means that the majority of, let's assume 30 days. I understand it's not absolute, but let's assume 30 days. So of those 30 days, as long as 16 of those 30 days are in the spring, meaning are post-vernal equinox, so then you're good. So then the Nisan month will be considered a spring month, and therefore there's no need to bet ma'aber. If, however, I do not have the majority of Nisan to be in the springtime, meaning after the vernal equinox, so then it's not good, and then I'm going to add another Adar so that I push it forward, so that it turns out to be in the spring. So the Gemara says, Vili Abri La Adar. The Gemara makes a suggestion, which we've already noted, and that is, if we're just talking about a one-day shift, so a one-day shift does not demand that you have to add another month. A one-day shift could just simply be, hey, take Adar, and instead of Adar being 29 days, make it 30 days. And that way, you'll now be shifting one day over, and you should be good. So, Amar Avach, Rabbi Yaakov, Tanim Alamala, Matika Chashiv, V'hachi Kamar. So the Gemara now is going to give a different shot, and that is as follows. Ad mi'uto ma'abrim, v'kama mi'oto arba asar yom. So the Gemara says that we are looking now, counting in the other direction, meaning instead of looking forward, we're actually counting backwards, meaning counting from the end of the month. And let's assume that we're no longer talking about Nisan. Let's say we're back in Tishrei. And it just simply means that from the end of the month, as long as there are 14 days remaining, so then you are going to, there's no need to be ma'aber. If there isn't 14 days remaining, so then you will need to be ma'aber. That's another pshat in the position of the Acherim. And Ravina Amar La'olam Acherim B'Tishrei Kameh. The Gemara presents on now another explanation of Acherim, and that is Ravina. And Ravina says that we're back in Tishrei. V'kasavri Acherim Kule Chag B'inan Ah. And the Gemara now is going to offer now another pshat, and this is a new pshat, so to say, and that is that the entire Yontif of Sukkot, including the first day of Sukkot, have to be post-autumnal equinox. Why? Because when the Torah says Chag HaSif, it includes even day one. Now, as we started off the entire discussion, we said, but wait one second. On the first day of Yontif, you're not allowed to gather on the first day of Yontif. V'yontif Rishon Yontif, Chag Beina, V'yontif Rishon, Yontif Rishon Chag HaSif Siv. So the Gemara is bothered by this very question. What do you mean? Aren't you supposed to be gathering and you're not allowed to gather on Yontif? Chag Haba Bizman Asifa. To which the Gemara says that's not the end of the world. In other words, because when it says Chag Asif, it just simply means the Yontif in which we're going to be gathering. Meaning, obviously, on day one itself, you're not allowed to gather. But it is the Yontif in which we're going to be gathering. So included in that is going to be on day one, even though the Torah prohibits us from gathering on day one. But still, the entire Yontif itself has to be post autumnal equinox. Okay. And so therefore, now we can take a breath and Where are we after almost completing yesterday's daf? Basically, we are now finishing up a discussion of exactly one of the considerations the Braisa told us back on daf Yud Aleph. One of the considerations for adding another Adar is going to be looking at where the equinoxes end up. And to put it succinctly, I mean, in other words, if I could distill the entire Gemara, basically, you need, in other words, as this consideration goes, you need part and parcel of Sukkot to be somewhere within the autumnal equinox. Where, or I should say better, how much of Sukkot need to be in the autumnal equinox? So that's subject to a lengthy debate. And the factors in that debate, again, I'm just reviewing, just summarizing, the factors in that debate is, do I need all Chol Moed Sukkot to be in the autumnal equinox, or just part of it? Does the autumnal equinox indicate the end of the previous season, or the beginning of the next season? So these are all subject to debates, Machlokes HaTanayim, and even within that, the Gemara further, the Brisa that we just went through gave us five different opinions in terms of precisely when this moment occurs in which it's going to demand an Ibur Shana. And so, but basically those are the basic considerations in terms of whether or not we're going to need to add another month. Okay.
The way we have it now is based on Akarim,
right? As David pointed out the other day, the way we have it now is that, right, in other words, on the 719, so, do we take all these into consideration now? I don't think so. In other words, you could just simply look at a calendar and see where the equinoxes fall out on.
But let's set it up.
Right, correct. Right, but I don't know. It's a reasonable question. I don't know. I don't know what, like, in other words, to me, what became the most, became the overarching factor is that where do we have the magic number in which the solar calendars and the lunar calendar are going to be most aligned with one another? The 719 cycle that he chose really gets us almost to perfection, nearly. It's near perfection in terms of alignment. And then on top of that, did he have now also in consideration the equinoxes lining up the way we just described? And according to whose opinion? That part I don't know. Like, I tap out, in other words, at that point of the discussion. Generally speaking, the Gemara says that Cherem is the opinion of a mayor, if it's not identified. Okay. All right, with that stated, now we are in Yud Gimel Amud Beis, and we move topics of discussion. We're now up to the topic of Smicha. The Mishnah taught us that when doing Smicha, so I need a Beis Din of how many? So the Mishnah had a Machlokas between the Tanaim, whether it's not, it's going to be five or it's going to be three. Now, when we talk about Smicha really can be broken down into two different discussions. For our first part of our discussion, we're going to be talking about Smicha on a Karban. Karban brought by Beis Din, yes. Sanhedrin comes up with an erroneous ruling, it's possible. Right, we are all humans, subject to error, and if Beis Din comes up with an incorrect ruling, and the majority of the Jewish people follow the incorrect ruling, so, and there's an entire Masech that they dedicate to this topic. Right, it's called Horios. We will see it later in the Daf Yomi cycle. So then there is a special carbon that's brought. The carbon is detailed in the fourth parak of Sefer Vayikra and Parshas Vayikra. So it's called Parhelm Davar Shel Tzibur. And in this Parhelm Davar Shel Tzibur, in the special carbon that's brought, it's the carbon chatas. So you have members of the Sanhedrin who are going to be there and doing actual smicha, placing their hands on the animal. Well, how many members of the Sanhedrin are going to be doing so? So that is what the machlokas we saw in our Mishnah, and the Gemara now is going to give a somewhat more detailed discussion of this machlokas Tanur Rabbanan. We are starting on Yud Gimel Amud Beis, and we are a third of the way down. Tanur Rabbanan v'samchu ziknei yachol ziknei ashok. I might have thought that are there any elders tamalom or eda? So no, the Torah says that they have to be members of the congregation. Eda yachol katnei eda. Okay, members of the Sanhedrin, but not the Sanhedrin ha-gadol tamalom or ha-eda miyuchadim. The hay is an article. It means the members of the Eda, which then comes out to being they have to be part of the members of the Sanhedrin Hagadol. The Kamein, and how many of the 71? V'samchu shnayim ziknei shnayim ve'ein beis neshakom mosifam aleim od echad arei kan chamisha. Div Rav Yehuda. So according to Rav Yehuda, there are two verbs in the Torah describing it. One is ziknei, and ziknei is not a verb. And sorry. There are two, in this case, nouns. So, Well, one's a verb, one's a noun. So samchu is plural. Zikne is plural. Again, each one, we're only going to assume two for each one. So it's two plus two. And then we can have an even number. Even though, I'll just point out, by the way, this is not... They're not deciding a halacha over here. There's no vote over here. They're just simply representing the Sanhedrin in placing their hands. But still, once they have a shem beis din, so you can't operate with an even number, therefore another one is going to be added. That gets us to five. So according to Rav Yehuda, five members of the Sanhedrin are going to be placing their hands on the parhelam davar. Rabbi Shimon Amar Zikne Shtayim Ve'en Beis In Shakol Mosif Alem Odech Harei Kan Shlosha. And according to Rabbi Shimon, the word Zikne is two. Two cannot be, you can't have two because it's an even number, therefore you can add one more, it gets us to three. And the Gemara now is just simply going to go back and forth. What is Rabbi Shimon doing with that extra pasuk? Rabbi Shimon aksiv v'samchu ami b'ayle l'gufe. Rabbi Shimon says, I need the samchu to tell me the guf halacha, the basic halacha, that they have to put their hands on the animal. Rabbi Yehuda l'gufe lo tzarech. Rabbi Yehuda says, unnecessary. Dim kein lo delo asiv v'samchu l'drasha lichtov. Because the Torah could have gotten away without saying the word v'samchu. Zikne ha'eda yedeim arosh apar. The Torah could have just simply said that the zikne ha'eda are going to, without saying the word somech, just simply say hands on the animal. Rabbi Shimon iksiv ha'chiav, I mean, am I al b'samach? Rabbi Shimon says no. If the Torah would have just simply said the word al does not necessarily mean on top of. Meaning al is a preposition, but al could also simply mean next to. V'Rabbi Yehuda gamar rosh rosh me'ola, and Rabbi Yehuda says no. Well, since we learned it out through a gzereshava from the word rosh, from the words rosh also used in conjunction to a regular carbon ola, where there clearly the Torah's directive is to put your hand on the animal using the gzereshava. The same thing is going to be true regarding the parhelam davar shel tzibur. Rabbi Shimon lo gamar rosh me'ola, and Rabbi Shimon does not accept the gzereshava. And here the Gemara once again concludes, like it does in a number of places, where some do hold of a gzeira shava, some do not. Okay, and then it just begs the question, how can they argue about a gzeira shava? And right, that's part of the Masorah. But the Gemara, it's not the first Gemara that has done that. Okay. So, Gemara just simply took us through now a little bit more of the inner mechanics of what is the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, vis-a-vis how many members of the Sanhedrin need to be putting their hands on the parhelam davar shel tzibur. Is it going to be five or is it going to be three? The accepted halacha is five. In other words, not that, I mean, maybe Biyamena will see this, but the...
You're talking about the Sanhedrin Ketana, right? So 23, right?
No. These are members of the Sanhedrin Agadol who are going to be putting their hands on the Parhelam Davar Shel Tzibur in the event that it needs to be brought.
But why only three or five? Why not the entire group?
Right. It's a reasonable question, but the Gemara's assumption is that no, only a representative membership of the Sanhedrin Agadol. And how many? So that's the machlokas, whether it's going to be five or three. The Gemara, for a moment, entertained the idea that it would be some lower court, but the Gemara said no. The Gemara rejected because the Torah said the word ha'eda. Okay. Now we're going to be moving into an interesting discussion in the Gemara, and that is smicha is a reference to a carbon, and smicha also is a reference to ordination, rabbinic ordination. Okay, I've said this many times, but I'll just simply repeat myself over here. Right, nowadays, so we still have some form of rabbinic ordination, but nowadays it is reverential. It's to confer title on a person, but it's not the same kind of smicha that we are discussing here in our Gemara. In our Gemara over here, we're talking about smicha as an unbroken chain. An unbroken chain that goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu gave smicha to Yoshua, and that now smicha conferring ordination went on and on until a point in time. Now, until what point in time? So here's what I know for sure. The Tanaim and the Amoraim were given smicha, and as we're going to see over the course of today's daf, smicha given only in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, you cannot give smicha outside of Eretz Yisrael. Although, to be perfectly clear, the Gemara does not give a reason why that is. But smicha can only be given in Eretz Yisrael. And also, what I do know is that at some point in time after the period of the Amoraim, the smicha chain was broken. I know it was broken because I've reported before, now I've reported again, that when Rav Yosef Cairo Right, Rav Yosef Cairo was born in Spain in 1488, 4 years before the Inquisition, and obviously as a result of the Inquisition was kicked out of Spain. Right, went through North Africa and ended up in Israel in the beginning of the 16th century. And what he wanted to do together with colleagues in Tzfas is that they wanted to reinstitute the smicha. Now, if it was a broken chain, how could they even entertain the discussion? It's based on a comment on the Rambam. The Rambam says that if the majority of the rabbinate living in Israel, I don't have the language in front of me. It's either a majority or it has to be unanimous. Sorry, I don't have the words of the Rambam in front of me. But if the rabbinate in Israel agree to restart the smicha, so it can be jump started again, even though the chain was broken. And so based on that, so Rav Yosef Cairo, together with his colleague in Tzfat, wanted to restart the smicha. It was not successful. It didn't restart it. The Rabbanim in Yerushalayim at the time did not agree to it. Okay, so whatever. Okay, and that's an interesting historical discussion based on our Gemara. But when our Gemara, we're talking about smicha, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about the unbroken chain of smicha conferred from Moshe to Yeshua going forward. We will be discussing in our Gemara momentarily that there was a point in time in the period of the Tanaim where it almost was broken. That's coming up in just a short second, from a couple minutes from now. With that stated, the Gemara is going to be asking some of the most basic questions regarding this process of conferring smicha. What does it allow you to do once you are conferred with smicha? So now you are a dayan mumcha. You are an expert judge. You can judge cases of kenasos, meaning in addition to monetary law, you can judge also punitive fines as well. It goes without saying that you can judge capital cases, malchus cases as well. And like we discussed earlier in the Masechta, it also gives you a certain amount of immunity. Meaning, as long as you are not totally negligent in what you in your decision, you are now given also immunity. So that in the event that based on a judgment call, you had money going in one direction, and it turns out that what you did was misguided or miscalculated, but it was a judgment call, so then you don't have to pay. You, the judge, don't have to pay. You are a licensed practitioner, and you are afforded a certain amount of immunity. All this is part and parcel of the smicha discussion. Let's begin the Gemara. Tana, we learned in a brisa, smicha v'smicha zekenim megimel. Now, this is not the first time we saw this brisa, that smicha and smicha zekenim is with three. Now, my smicha, okay. Smicha zekenim, like we just got done discussing that. That's the parhel m'davar, that's when they put their hands on the animal. What is smicha in of itself? Gemara goes on to explain. My smicha zekenim. So I'm Rav Yochanan mismach sabe. So Rav Yochanan says, and when we're talking about just smicha, so what we mean by that is conferring title on somebody. Meaning what you and I would refer to as smicha. Giving somebody the title of Rebbe. I'm Le'abai Rav Yosef mismach sabe b'shlosha minalan. Now, in terms of conferring, Giving status to a person, now he's a musmach. So how many people need to be conferring? So three. In other words, so it has to be three people who are conferring. Now, for sure, of those three people, one of them have to be a musmach. Do all three of them have to be a musmach? Open for a discussion, open for a debate. The Rishonim do, in fact, debate that issue. But anyway, so how do I know? Where do we see that? It has to be three. Minalan. Ilem emidichsiv yismach es yadav alav. So let's talk about the first smicha in the Torah, which is Moshe giving smicha to Yoshua. So what does it sound like from the Pesukim? Sounds like it's one. Meaning it's just Moshe. So the Gemara says, okay, so then that would mean then that if that's at the precedent, so that means that smicha would only have to be done by one. Maybe Moshe is a fair substitute for 71. So the Gemara says, but if that's true, so then that every time you're going to confer somebody with smicha, you're going to need 71. So Kasha, the Gemara, once again now, for a second time today, says, okay, you know what? You're right. I don't have a good source in terms of why smicha is done with three, although I'm telling you smicha is done with three. Okay, even though we don't have a source for it. Now, Amar le Rav Acha b'Rei de Rav le Rav Asha b'Yad Ma'amisham Chenle. Gemara asks a question. It's like such an innocent question. Okay, so I understand smicha. Do the conferring chachamim, do they actually need to physically put their hands on the one receiving smicha? Meaning, Moshe did so with Yoshua. And when we talk about smicha regarding a karban, they do put their hands physically on the animal. So when conferring smicha on a student and giving him now the title of Rebbe, so can you do that? Do you have to do that? Do you have to put your hands on him? Amar le smechim le bishma. Kari le Rebbe. V'yahava le rishus lemei din dina kenasos. So the Gemara says no. What you're doing when you're conferring smicha is that you're giving him the status. You're designating a new name on him. You're giving him the title of Rebbe, and he can judge cases of kenasos. He can judge punitive cases. Very interesting Rashi over here on the bottom of the Amud. Let's just quickly take a look at the Rashi on the very bottom of the Amud. Lemeidan dina kenasos. Rashi writes Elohim tziv demashma dayane mumche v'hainus muchem. In order to judge punitive cases, like we discussed in the beginning of the Masechta, day one of the Masechta, the Torah repeats the word Elohim three times. Elohim over here meaning judges, meaning there have to be three judges. Rashi reminds us if it's regular monetary cases of compensation, you don't need mismachim. You don't. They don't need to be conferred. Mishum ne'ilas delas. Because Rashi reminds us. Remember what we said in the beginning of the Masechta. We want people to lend money. If there is a demand that every time I lend money, the only way I'm going to get paid back is in front of a court of musmachim. That's a lot of regulation, and it will de-incentivize me from wanting to lend. Therefore, the Chachamim relax the rules. We discussed this in the beginning of the Masechta. And now Rashi goes on to say, now, if there is no incentive issue, and we're just talking about being a shomer, or theft, so those are cases which we're going to judge, and not only are we going to be judging, we're even going to be judging those cases in Bava as well. Now, in Bava, we are not giving smicha. The Gemara will say this clearly in just a couple minutes from now. But Rashi over here knows the Gemara. Rashi tells us that we do not give smicha in Bava. So, question. In Bava, how are we judging cases of theft? How are we judging cases of shomrim? And look, when it comes to lending, so we already pointed out there, we've deregulated. But when it comes to these cases where I need smicha, and above all, I don't get smicha, so how do they do that? Rashi says, Shlichusai kavdina kedemafarish ba'achova. So you go back to the 8th parak of Baba Kama, and Rashi reminds us in the 8th parak of Baba Kama, we talked about how we can judge certain cases above all by proxy. Meaning we are basically serving on the court in Bavel as a proxy court of Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael they have smicha, and they allow us to do shlichus as agency to judge these cases. However, the ability to serve in a court in Bavel by proxy of Eretz Yisrael is only in cases of theft and only in cases of Dal Shomer, because those are cases which Rashi says are A, they are real losses, meaning if somebody steals money from me, that's a real loss. If somebody watching my item and he lost it, that's obviously a real loss. That represents real loss. And also, those are common cases. But when it comes to kenosis, when it comes to fine, punitive fine, so we're not talking about real loss. Meaning, to charge somebody double because he was a ganav, that's not a real loss. That's a punitive fine. So that was not implemented in Bavel, meaning the courts in Bavel were not given the authority to judge those cases because that does not represent a real loss. Okay. Just an important Rashi, just in terms of, it reminds us the Gemara and Baba Kama engages how it is that we're going to be able to judge any cases out in Bavel. Again, for loans, we deregulated. For cases of theft and shomrim, they're acting as proxy of Eretz Yisrael. In cases of punitive fine, they were not authorized to do so. Okay, back to our Gemara. We said that in order to confer smicha, you need a panel of three chachamim to confer smicha to a musmach. The Gemara says v'chad lo samech v'ham Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. The Gemara quotes the following: in the name of Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Baron Zachar Oso Ishla. I'm sorry, Zachar Oso Ish Latov. Whenever you mention his name, he should be reminded for good. Rav Yehuda ben Bava Shmo, Shomalehu Nishachu Dine Kenasos Beisrael. Had it not been for him, we would have forgotten all of the Dina Knesses. Now, forgotten, what does that mean? Nishtachu nigros hinu. Gemara itself doesn't understand. What does that mean? What do you mean forget? You don't forget. In other words, if you forgot the laws, so just relearn them. So the Gemara corrects itself. Bitlu dine kenosis meisrael. What it means is that had it not been for Yehuda ben Bava, we would have totally lost the chain of smicha, and therefore from his generation going forward, there wouldn't have been smicha anymore, and therefore nobody could judge punitive cases, dine kenosis. Shepa machas gzera machas arasha gzera yisrael. The Romans made the following decree on the Jewish people. Shekol asomech yareg. That anyone who gives smicha will be put to death. V'chol anisma gereg. Anyone who receives smicha is going to be put to death. The city itself where the smicha occurs is going to be destroyed. And any surrounding area also will be uprooted. So, the Romans, in order to totally do away with all smicha, came back to basically, I mean, we're talking about serious ramifications for anyone giving, receiving smicha, or the city hosting the smicha and the surrounding environment. So ma asar Rav Yehuda ben Bava. So Rav Yehuda ben Bava, knowing what the consequences would be to give smicha, still sacrificed himself in order to do so. Halach v'yashav lo ben shnei arim gedolim ben shnei ayaros gedolos. So he went outside the city and he was in no city environment, as Rashi points out, in order to protect the city, because had he done it in the city would have been destroyed. Uben shnei tchumei shabbos ben usha l'shafra'am. So he was between the cities of Usha and Shafra'am, v'samach sham chamisha zekenim. And he conferred smicha on five elders, Ve'elohein, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Lazar ben Shemua, and Rabbi Avya Mosif Af Rabbi Nechemia. Now, according to another version, Rabbi Nechemia was also added to the list of Musmachim. So according to one version, it was five. According to another version, it was six. Kevishi Ikiru Oiveim Bahem. Now, the Romans realized, recognized what Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was doing. So they sent out a troop in order to kill Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and the Musmachim. Amal Am Banai Rotsu. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, in anticipation of the Romans coming, so he said to the Musmachim, who just received smicha, you run, I'll stay here, I'll take the hit. Amru lo Rebbe mate alecha. So the students turn to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, says, what will be to you? Amru lehem, areini mutal efneim ke'evin she'en lo hofchem. I'm going to be like a stone, meaning I can totally take it, I can handle it, don't worry about me, you guys run. And the Braisa ends tragically, where Rav Yehuda ben Bava received 300 spears in his body. He looked like a sieve, and he basically took the blow of the Romans.
Who told the Romans?
You can ask me all the details you want. I'm limited to. I'm with you. I only have what the Gemara to work with. Yeah. Yes, he's one of the Asarim Rugimachas. So, yeah. So Rav Yehuda ben Bava, so the Gemara over here, and there was the Gemara. The story is obviously tragic, and it's devastating. And you think about it, and it really brings out emotions. The Gemara right now, just clinically, is looking at one aspect of the story, and that is Rav Yehuda ben Bava seems to have been giving this smicha by himself. And the Gemara said that, again, we don't know the source, but the Gemara says that in order to give smicha, you have to have be a panel of three. So the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda ben Bava achrina hava ba'adai v'had lo chashulu mishim kvoted Rav Yehuda ben Bava. And the Gemara says that Rav Yehuda ben Bava did in fact have two other people with him conferring smicha. It's just that because Rav Yehuda ben Bava was so great, so they weren't mentioned in the story, which makes the story even more remarkable, because now, not only Rav Yehuda ben Bava sacrificed, but presumably, there were two other people as well, but in other words, they were sacrificed, but they were unnamed people in the sacrifice. Or maybe you could suggest that they also ran away with the students, but I don't know. Okay, Ben pointed out, the Gemara now is going to point out. These names sound awfully familiar, don't they? Meaning that they received smicha from Yehuda ben Bava. Let's focus on Rav Meir. We know that Rav Meir has received smicha from Rabbi Akiva. So, what's the story? Rav Meir received smicha twice? And the answer is, yep, he received smicha twice. Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda ben Bava, Samche, Vaham, Rav Abba Barchana, Rav Yochanan. If you say that Rabbi Meir did not receive smicha from Rabbi Akiva, you're making a big mistake. He did receive smicha from Rabbi Akiva. It is a strange language, by the way, to describe. Like, don't you dare say that Rabbi Meir didn't receive smicha from Rabbi Akiva. You know, the Gemara in Shabbos, when describing David HaMelech, the Gemara there says the same. It's the same lashon. Don't you dare say that David HaMelech made a, you know, was chote. Don't say he was a sinner. And anyone who says such a statement is making a mistake. So there I understand, by the way. In other words, one would think that David HaMelech made a mistake, and that's what the Gemara is cautioning over there. Don't say that. Over here, like, what's the controversy? Don't you dare say that Rabbi Meir didn't get smicha from Rabbi Akiva. He did. Like, why is that? I don't fully understand. Why is it like the Gemara is saying it like as a matter of controversy?
How can we question that way? You would have been that there are two, but he was really by himself. I mean, in fact, after 24,000 died, he was
the one. Again, I understand that, but you'll say the same thing that the Gemara just said regarding Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, that it was in conjunction with others.
Rabbi, he was also.
Yeah, I mean, the Gemara said it by Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. I assume you have to say the same thing by Rabbi Akiva.
Where is he stand in terms of Rabbi Yehuda ben Hanani and so on?
Yeah, it's fair questions. I mean, they're obviously all. I don't know. They're around the same generation. So the Gemara says, Samche Rabbi Kiva v'lo Kibla, Samche Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava v'kibla. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Meir received smicha twice. Once he received smicha from Rabbi Kiva, it didn't take. I'm just translating the Gemara literally. And then the second time he received smicha from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, and then it took. Okay, I know. It's a fair question to ask. Why didn't it take when Rabbi Akiva gave him smicha? So Rashi over here just simply gives a very succinct explanation. Rashi says, because he was a bachar. Now, bachar over here could simply mean that he was young. Bachar could also mean that he was single. Okay. So, either way. In other words, for reasons which I may not fully understand, but that doesn't matter. The smicha that he received from Rabbi Akiva was good, but just not accepted. And then when he got smicha from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, so it was more accepted. Okay, let's continue. Amar Rav Yishua Melevi, Ein smicha b'chutz la'aretz. Smicha is not given in chutz la'aretz. Like I said earlier, the Gemara understands as a basic tenet of smicha that it can only be done in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara does not give an explanation why. And Rashi does not explain why as well. My Ein smicha ilemet alo dani dina kenasas klal b'chutz la'aretz v'hatanan sanhedrin na'agas bein b'aretz bein b'chutz la'aretz. Now, In terms of practicing, if you have received smicha in Eretz Yisrael, you can for sure judge cases outside of Eretz Yisrael. There's nothing that would inhibit the actual practicing judges to try a case and adjudicate a case in Bava. That you can do. But what you cannot do, however, is that you cannot confer smicha outside of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says like this: Pshita, somchem b'chutz aretz v'nismachem b'aretz ha'amina d'lo. It's clear, it's obvious that if the one who is conferring it lives outside Eretz Yisrael, and the one receiving smicha is in Eretz Yisrael, that obviously is not going to work. So the Gemara says, but the Gemara says, but as a curiosity, more than a curiosity. If let's say the somech was in Eretz Yisrael, and the person receiving smicha was outside of Eretz Yisrael, so can this happen? Can someone living in Eretz Yisrael confer smicha to someone outside of Eretz Yisrael? So tashma. The Gemara says, well, let's consider. Rav Yochanan wanted to give smicha to one of his students, Rav Shem and Bar Abba, and Rabbi Shimon ben Zerid v'chad yimei umana Rav Yonasan ben Achmai, v'amri lav Rav Yonasan ben Achmai v'chad yimei umana Rav Shimon ben Zerid. So, and he wanted, meaning he, Rav Yochanan, wanted to confer smicha on two other students as well. And the Gemara says that the one student who was physically by him, so he conferred smicha. The one student who was not physically by him, he did not confer smicha. So the Gemara basically learns from this episode that in order for smicha to be received, the musmach and the somech, the one receiving, the one giving, have to be actually physically next to one another. Rabbi Chanin, Rabbi Yoshi, have a kamishtakid, Rabbi Yochanan lemismachinu. Gemara tells another story where Rabbi Yochanan wanted to give smicha to two other of his students, Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Oshia. Lo have mistayim osa. However, there was not. He didn't have siyata mishmaya. Just simply did not. Have, it wasn't. It wasn't the right time or right place. Now, why wasn't it the right time or right place? So again, going back to Rashi. So Rashi says over here, because he couldn't simply get two other people to confer together with him. Havakam and Star Tuva, now it distressed him terribly. He had anxiety over the fact that he couldn't give smicha to these students. No, this is Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan of the Gemara. Yeah, in other words, smicha continued through the period of the Amorai.
But Rav was the last one.
Who?
Rav was the last one that got smicha.
No. Through the the period of the Amoraim, smicha continued. When did it come to an end? Sometime between the Amoraim and
doesn't give it a title of Tanya, but okay.
Consider Rabbi Yochanan, meaning he was an Amora, but he had Rabbi. He had smicha, and that continued in Eretz Yisrael. Again, until when I don't know. But Havakam and Star Tuva, Amrulay Lon Star Mar, the Anam in the base Elika Sinan. So unbelievably, remarkably, they said to Rav Yochanan, "Look, I know you want to give us smicha, and I know you're trying, but the fact of the matter is that we are descendants of Eli. Open up the second parak of Shmuel Aleph, and you will read tragically the story of Eli and his sons, and the curse that came to the family of Eli as a result of the behavior of the sons. And so now we are years later. We are." Approximately 1,000 years later, and they are saying, look, genealogically we go all the way back, we trace our roots back, and we know that we are descendants of Eli, and therefore we are by curse not allowed to get smicha. So you're not to give smicha to the Beis Eli Shenemar. Lo yezakein beveisecha kol ha'amim. My zakein. This is part of the klala that the Navi gives to Eli and his children. And that is that you are not to have a zakin coming out of your house. So Elam is zakin mamishtan. Does that mean somebody who does not live a long life? We know that already based on another pasuk. The pasuk says vaksiv kol marbis beischa yamus on Hashem ela smicha. It must mean that in addition to the fact that they are cursed with non-longevity, they are also going to be cursed with not being able to receive smicha. Rabbi Zera hava mimato lemismeche. The Gemara tells another story where Rabbi Zera was hiding from receiving smicha, meaning he avoided it. Dama Rebbe Elazar lo'olam havekabel vekayam. A person should hide in the dark, says Rashi. The word kabel means afel. A person should hide in the dark and not receive smicha, meaning live undercover, and don't take leadership positions, because you know what it does, it kills you. Okay? I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. This is the way Rashi explains the Gemara. Right? Taking leadership positions kill you, and Rabbi Zera wanted a long life, so therefore he ran and he hid from these positions, from these leadership positions. However, he learned something new, and that is that when you accept a leadership position and are elevated to a leadership position, it provides for you a mechila, you will receive atonement for your previous sins. Okay. This statement in of itself obviously needs a lot of hesber, needs more explanation, that which I'm not going to be providing right now. But anyway, but he heard that, and now I'm feeling nafshei. So then Rabbi Zera did a 180, right, heshkafically. He's like, oh, okay, fine. In other words, I want a long life, but I also want mechila as well. So he then ran to go get smicha. Ki samcha l'Rabbi Zera shavar lehachi. Now, at the Chag HaSmicha, right, it was a bunch of years ago, 6 years ago, I think, I attended the YU Chag HaSmicha. It was fantastic. So so at the Chag HaSmicha, so what did they do for the Musmachim? So specifically for Rabbi Zera, they sang to him. Now, there was no singing. Actually, that's not true. They had a band over there. They had singing at the Chag HaSmicha. But they sang to Rabbi Zera, and here's the song they sang to Rabbi Zera. I love it. They took a ballad. Again, there's no hyperbole over here. They took a ballad that's normally sang to a kala at her wedding, and they took that song and they basically they didn't even change the words, and they sang that song to Rabbi Zera at his Chag HaSmicha. To you and I, that seems a little bit unusual, but that's what they did. So, okay, I'll speak for myself. Seems a little unusual, but they did that. So, Shara Lehachi, this is the song they sang to Rabbi Zera at his smicha. So, lo chav, lo srak, lo pirchas, v'yalas chayin. No makeup, right? No eye makeup, no face makeup, right? No makeup, and she looks beautiful. That's the song they sang to Rabbi Zera at his smicha. Ki samcha le Rabbi Ami, le Rabbi Asi, Shara Lehachi. And the Gemara says, and let's go over some more ballads and more lyrics of songs they sang for people who received smicha. Rabbi Am and Rabbi Asi received smicha, and this is what they sang to them. Komendein samchua, lanu. You get guys like this, these are the kind of guys that we want smicha. Lo sis mechulanu lo misarmitin velo misarmisin. People, whoever, who have backwards form of thinking or are incapable of communicating and clarifying their thought, don't give them smicha. But these guys, these are the kinds of guys who want smicha. Another way of basically saying the same idea. Although Rashi on the word tarmisin says, I'm a little bit stuck over here. But it's the same basic idea. We're not done yet with the song singing and the ballads. Rabbi Abao went from the yeshiva to the Beit Kesar. He both was a major Talmud Chacham and he had serious political clout amongst the Romans. And as he was traveling back and forth, either to Rome or to whatever, the Roman capital in Israel. So, Mashrin Lei. So this is what the matrons would be singing to him about him. Okay. If we could just, you know, process some of these Gemaras, it's unbelievable. You are a great one. You are the leader of the people. You are... You are a light to the nation, and Kadosh Baruch Hu should give you peace upon your entrance and upon your exit. Okay, Arifas Egla B'Shlosha. Let's just quickly run through the next sugya so that I'd like to catch up to pace. I know we're over time right now. Tana Rabbanu V'Yatzu Zekenecha V'Shoftecha Zekenecha Shnayim V'Shoftecha Shnayim Ve'in Beis Nishakal Mosif Alam Ode Echad. We're talking now about the procedure of the Egla Rufa and specifically the measuring of the Egla Rufa. How many members of the court need to be there in order to measure? So, Harei Kan Chamisha Div Rav Yehuda. So, according to Rav Yehuda, using the same methodology that we used previously, by virtue of the fact that the Torah says the words Shoftecha and Zikenecha, that's 2 plus 2. Now making a number that gets us to 5. Rabbi Shimon Omer Zikenecha Shnayim Ve'in Beis Nishakom Mosifan Lam Od Echad Harei Kan Shlosha. So, Rabbi Shimon again, same as we saw earlier, gets us to the number 3 because it says the words Zikenecha. Rabbi Shimon Hai Shoftecha Ma'avidle, what are you going to do with the word Shoftecha? Homi Bailin Miuchadim Sheba Shoftecha. So what he derives from there is that they have to be not just any elders but members of the Sanhedrin. Rabbi Yehuda Mizikenecha Zikenecha Navka. Rabbi Yehuda learns it out through Gzer Shava. Rabbi Shimon E Mizikne Havamin Zikne Hashok. Kaz Rachman Zikenecha. Vikas of Zikenecha Havamin Sanhedrin Ketana. If just zikne, it just means elders. If it would have said zikenecha, okay, members of a lower court. And the word shoftecha tells us that they have to be members of the highest court. They have to be members of the Sanhedrin Agadol. Rabbi Yehuda gamar zikne zikne mivisamchu. And Rabbi Yehuda learns it out through Gzeir Shava from smicha that, of the Parhelm Davar Sibor that we did earlier this morning. Zikne ha'edam. Sorry. Mivisamchu zikne ha'edah eskedehem. Malahalam yuchadim shebe edah afkam yuchadim shebe zikenecha. E yalef leilef kula me'asam zikenecha v'shoftecha lamali. So the Gemara says, okay, once you have Gzeir Shava, then all these drushes over here become unnecessary. Because Gzeir Shava over there already told us that for the Parahalam Dov Shel Tzibor, it has to be members of Sanhedrin, it has to be 5 members of the Sanhedrin Agadol. And once you have Gzeir Shava, that's it. I don't need the drushas over here. Ella. So the Gemara says, okay, scratch everything we just said. And the Gemara says, and it comes from the following. Vav vishoftecha leminyana. So it says, zikenecha vishoftecha. Now, I know I didn't pronounce the pasuk correctly, but I was just... No, it was good. It was good. Zikenecha vishoftecha. So, and that double language of and the vav in between tells us, 2 plus 2. So the Gemara says, and what is Rabbi Shimon going to tell you? The Rabbi Shimon Vavlo Darish, So then Rabbi Shimon doesn't darshan the Vav. Elameyata v'yatsu shnayim amadu du shnayim l'Rabbi Yehuda arei tisha l'Rabbi Shimon shiva. So the Gemara says, okay, but it also says yatsu, they will go out. That's another two. And it says madudu, they will measure. That's another two. So that's another four. So now according to Rabbi Yehuda, tacking another four, that gets you to nine. According to Rabbi Shimon, tacking another four, that gets you to seven. So the Gemara says, no. Ha'umi bai lilicha detanya. No, that's just telling us a different halacha. And that is v'yatsu, hein v'lo shluchei. Then in terms of who's measuring, the Beis Din cannot send out a commission. The Sanhedrin Agadol have to, members of the Sanhedrin Agadol have to go out themselves. Furthermore, even if we know with absolute clarity which city is closer to the corpse that's found, I still have to go through the process of measuring. Tzarech la'asok b'medida. There still has to be involved in the measuring. We're almost done. We're on the top of Yudala Amud Beis, Masisin Delo Ki Aitana. There is one more opinion that we're going to take into consideration. When finding a corpse between two cities and identifying which city is closer, so far what do we have? The opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. In terms of whether or not I need five or three members of the Sanhedrin to come out and do the measuring. The Gemara now is going to record one more opinion on this matter, and that is the opinion of Elazar ben Yaakov. The Tanya we learned on the Brisa, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer. V'yatzu zekenecha v'shoftecha zekenu zu Sanhedrin, v'shoftecha zu melech v'kohen gadol. When it says Shoftecha, it means that in addition to the Sanhedrin, you need the king and you need the Kohen Gadol as well. Melch v'siv melch b'mishpat yamid aretz, Kohen Gadol d'chsiv avata l'kohenim v'lemim v'el shofet. Okay. So you see the word Shofet is used both in conjunction to a king and to a Kohen Gadol, and therefore they're coming in addition to Sanhedrin. Question, says the Gemara. Ibailu, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, Bechad Palik, Ubetarti Palik, Bemelch, Bekohen Gadol Palik, Ava Besanhedrin, Ikarebi Huda, Ikarebi Shimon. According to Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, I know that he demands the king and the Kohen Gadol to come out. Does he also, in terms of Sanhedrin, is it going to just simply be representation like either Rebbe Huda or Rebbe Shimon? Three or five? Odilma b'Sanhedrin nami palig da amr kula Sanhedrin b'inan, or maybe no. Maybe according to Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, you also in addition need the entire Sanhedrin to come out, and so therefore the Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov's position may very well in fact be that I need a king, a Kohen Gadol, and the entire Sanhedrin to come out. Amr of Yosef Tashma, the Gemara of course now going to go, quote the following Braisa. Matzah Nebeis Pagi. We are now discussing for the first time in our Masechta the idea of Zaken Mamre. A Zaken Mamre is a member of the Sanhedrin who, after Beis Din has issued a ruling and voted and concluded on a ruling, this member of the Sanhedrin says, I know you've ruled in that direction, I'm still going to be ruling against you. Such a person is described as a Zaken Mamre, and is a rebellious age, and we will be discussing later in the Masechta the penalty of being a Zaken Mamre. We are now just going to quickly quote a Braisa that is giving a description of a Zaken Mamre who meets a Sanhedrin outside of the courtroom. Now, they're out in the field. Why are they out in the field? That's why we're mentioning it over here. Matzana beis pagi v'himra aleihem. So he's now the Zaken Mamre visits the court while they're out in the field, and he says to them, I'm defiant, and I'm going against the ruling. So yachol tehamrasa amrasa. Now is he rebellious? The answer, of course, is yes. Is it a formal rebellion? Is it a legal rebellion? The answer is no. Why? Because Tamalomer become Tavalisa Lamakum, Lamisha Makum Gorim. So because they're not in the Lishka Sagazis. In order for it to be a legal and formal rebellion, he has to rebel against them while they are situated in the Lishka Sagazis in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Or I should say rather next to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, enough of Kama. Now, how many members of the Beis went out? So the Gemara says, well, if you only have a smattering of members of the Beis Din, of the Sanhedrin, who are out on the field, so he's rebelling, but how do you know he's rebelling? Could it not be that the members of the Sanhedrin who are back home in the Lishka Sagazis, maybe they're agreeing with him? So Elab Shida Danafakulu. So it must be that the entire Sanhedrin is out in the field. Lamai. And the entire Sanhedrin is out in the field. Why? Because they're taking a little stroll? because it's, you know, it's a nice time for a walk. So ilam ledvar rishos mi matzu nafki vaksiv sharerecha agena sahara yechzer hamezeg. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Shir Hashirim, and from there the Gemara derives that the members of the Sanhedrin are supposed to be in the courtroom as often as possible, meaning that there really should be there's no reason that for just a dvar harishus they're out and about. That is not the general position of the Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin should be in the court at all times. Elapshita ledvar mitzvah. It must be that they're being pulled out of the courtroom, out of the lishkas hagazis, for an exceptional reason, notably a mitzvah. What mitzvah is going to demand the entire court to be out of the courtroom? So the Gemara now conjectures that it must be that, you know what got him out of the courtroom? What got him out of the courtroom is the measuring of the Egla Rufa. Why all of them? Because this Braisa reflects the opinion of Rav Lazar ben Yaakov. So it is admittedly a lot of speculation, but the Gemara now has come up with a reason why the entire court left the courtroom. The Amar Kulis Sanhedrin Be'inan. Amarle Abai Lo. So Abai says, it's what you said is all fine, but I can give another argument. Remember, we talked earlier in the first day of Sanhedrin, the annexation of Yerushalayim, where if you do that, you need the entire Sanhedrin to be out and about in order to annex. So if you want a reason why everyone's out and about, it has nothing to do with the Agla Rufa, but rather it's just simply for annexation of Yerushalayim. So that's why they were out and about. And let's just now finish up with this. Tanya Kavasi de Rav Yosef. The Gemara now is going to quote a brisa that is going to support Rav Yosef, which is that that for the measuring of the Egla Arufa, I need the entire Sanhedrin to go out. And here we go. Here you have it. Straightforward. Brisa says that we have the entire Sanhedrin out for the measuring of the parah of the, for the measuring of the Egla Arufa, and for the measurement of the Egla Arufa, the entire Sanhedrin went out. This brisa then would be reflecting the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, who subscribes to this idea that you can go out for the entire Sanhedrin would need to go out for the Egla Rufa, in distinction to the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, which only a representation of the Sanhedrin needs to go out, according to Rabbi Yehuda 5, according to Rabbi Shimon 3, obviously, but this brisa clearly sides with the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Okay. I can't.